It's the same kind of thing. You have some kind of scattering center here. And I want to assume that V of R really is zero outside some magic radius. Let's call that R0. And again, what I want to consider is what happens when plane waves are incident on this region from the left, so that the incoming waves have a wave function that looks like e to the ikz, and the scattered waves have a wave function that looks like e to the ik r over r times some function of theta. So again, we're going to assume that the potentials are spherically symmetric, and therefore this setup is going to be axisymmetric. So the first step is to go back to the Schrödinger equation. In this region where V is equal to zero, the Schrödinger equation in the absence of any potential is obeyed, so that minus h bar squared over 2m del squared psi equals e psi. And in our case, the energy you can get from this, it's h bar squared k squared over 2m, just from staring at that formula. And so you can put that in here. And so the Schrödinger equation boils down to del squared plus k squared acting on psi equals 0. And obviously, the wave function at the extreme left-hand end over there obeys this equation. Now, what is the general form of the wave function under these circumstances? The general form of the wave function is going to be independent of the azimuthal angle around here in terms of polar coordinates. So if you sort of go back to this sort of picture, pick some point here, r. That's a distance r from the scattering center. This angle is theta. And then there's some azimuthal angle around here, phi. Everything is going to be independent of phi under these circumstances. And so if you want to find general form of solutions of this equation, you find them by separating variables. So you write psi equals t of theta times some function r of r. And you plug it into that partial differential equation and find out what you get. The partial differential equation boils down to 1 over r squared d by dr of r squared d psi dr plus 1 over r squared sine theta d by d theta of sine theta plus k squared psi equals 0. If you substitute in this separation ansatz, then you will get 1 over big R r squared d by dr r squared d psi dr dr plus 1 over r squared t sine theta d by d theta sine theta dt by d theta plus k squared equals 0. So in other words, I've substituted in psi equals r times t and divided by rt. Now you have to separate variables, but with a little bit of hindsight, it's kind of easy to see what to do. Now there used to be lots of colored chalk here, but it seems to have disappeared. Ah, this will do. So you can take out this bit here, and you'll recognize that as the bit which is entirely and utterly and only angular dependent. And so you can say 1 over sine theta d by d theta of sine theta dt by d theta equals some constant times t. Perhaps it will make it easier to recognize if we multiplied everything out. And so if I multiply out by, we'll just leave it like this. This you might recognize as being Legendre's equation. But if you don't, the easiest thing to do is just to make the substitution x equals cos theta. If I multiply everything out here, this really amounts to d2t d theta squared, which is that thing acting on that one. Then there is a plus cot theta dt by d theta minus this constant times t equals 0. And if you make this substitution in terms of x equals cos theta, then d by d theta is equal to d by dx dx d theta, and that's equal to cos theta d by dx. Minus sine theta d by dx. D2 by d theta squared is d2x d theta squared d by dx plus dx d theta all squared d2 by dx squared, which is equal to minus cos theta d by dx plus sine squared theta d2 by d theta squared, d2 by dx squared. And if I plug these relationships into this differential equation, you end up with 1 minus x squared d2 by dx squared I think it's minus then, isn't it? Yes. Minus 2x dt dx minus some constant times t equals 0. And that you probably do recognize as Legendre's equation. These constants, so back up a bit. T is given by the Legendre polynomials. If this constant is identified with minus L into L plus 1 for L being an integer or 0. And I guess you've all seen that before. So these things we will call PL of x, or PL of cos theta. It amounts to the same thing. They're always normalized such that PL of 1 equals 1. The consequence of which is that PL of minus 1 is minus to the L. And the first few, the only ones we ever need to remember, are P0 of cos theta is 1. P1 of cos theta equals cos theta. P2 of cos theta is 1/2 into 3 cos squared theta minus 1. And if you ever need to have them properly normalized, then the integral of PL cos theta, PL prime of cos theta, sine theta, d theta from 0 to 2 pi is equal to delta of LL prime and some numerical factor which is equal to 1 over 2L plus 1, 2 over 2L plus 1. So those we have all seen before, I hope, but that should sort of bring it to the front of your mind. If you do not choose this constant to be L into L plus 1, the resultant functions will not be polynomials in x or cos theta, and you'll end up with something which is not normalizable or has unpleasant singularities somewhere. What about, well, that's, I think, should be all kind of familiar. What about the radial part of the wave function? Well, that's the other bit of this. You find it by substituting this expression here equals minus L into L plus 1. So the radial part of the wave function obeys well, you just replace this by the constant, and you end up with, explicitly, R double prime over R, multiplied by R, plus 2 over R, R prime, plus K squared minus L into L plus 1 over R squared times R equals 0. If you try to solve that in terms of standard functions, you will discover the solutions to this are Bessel functions, of half integer order. By convention, one usually calls the solutions to this equation spherical Bessel functions, and you deal with their properties on their own without referring back to things like big J or big Y. So these are usually called JL of KR and NL of KR, spherical Bessel functions of the first and second kinds. There are two solutions because this is a second order differential equation, and you end up finding both of those objects. Now that, of course, is no good without some kind of notion of what they actually are. So let's give, first of all, a precise formula for finding the Bessel functions. And then we can list a small number of properties that will be useful to us. So explicitly, if you ever need it, you will discover that JL of x is equal to minus x to the power L, 1 over x d by dx, L times, acting on sine x over x. Similarly, NL of x is equal to minus minus x to the L, 1 over x d by dx to the L, into cos x over x. So those are explicit formulae which are not often but sometimes needed. It is much easier to concentrate on the asymptotic forms of these functions. Firstly, if you take the limit as x goes to infinity, and retain only the leading order terms, you will discover that JL of x goes to sine x minus L pi over 2 divided by x. You will also discover that the one of the second kind, NL of x, goes to minus cos of x minus L pi over 2 divided by x. So what you can see from this immediately, without doing any work, just put x equal to kr, these things both represent spherical waves, but both simultaneously ingoing and outgoing. Simply because sine or cos can be written as e to the ix plus or minus e to the minus ix. So that's sort of physically what these things mean. They represent waves which are traveling in or out. So these would look like e to the ix. These look like the bits that look like e to the minus ix. The other place that you might be interested in these things is near the origin. Again, you can get this answer by judicious application of this formula, if you want to, and you will discover that JL of x for x small, just the leading term, looks like x to the power L over 2L plus 1, double factorial. It's possible that you don't know what double factorial is. So this is just, suppose for example you wanted 5 factorial, double factorial, that's 5 times 3 times 1. So you leave out the even ones. 7 factorial is 7 times 5 times 3 times 1. So you see that JL of x is nice and well behaved at the origin. By contrast, if you work out what NL looks like near the origin, you will discover that it's bad. Well, I suppose bad is an emotive word. We should really say unsatisfactory as a wave function. NL of x, for x small, looks like minus 2L minus 1 double factorial divided by x to the power L plus 1. So, near the origin, this is an unacceptable form of the wave function. For small values of L, the formula that was here but is now erased, is tractable and can be used to calculate J and N explicitly.
You mean the explicit formula?
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing that involved 1 over x divided by the x to the power L. And if you do that, you will discover that J0 of x is equal to sine x over x. N0 of x is equal to minus cos x over x. And so if you just stare at these things, this is exactly what you expect. Out at infinity, this term on top is oscillating, but the whole thing dies off like 1 over x. Same true here. Near the origin, this badness at x equals 0 cancels because sine x vanishes like x and it goes to a constant. J0, 0 is equal to 1. This thing, however, blows up like 1 over x. And that's terrible. You can do the same thing for J equals 1. So occasionally you need to know what J1 is. I'm sure that if you ever needed to know this, you'd be allowed to look it up. So. But it's worth seeing anyway. So J1 of x looks like sine x over x squared minus cos x over x. Do I believe that? Yes, I do believe that. Superficially, this looks terrible at x equals 0, but you will discover that the singularity is removable. There's an apparent singularity at x equals 0. But if you look carefully, it goes away. And again, out at infinity, it oscillates e to cos x divided by x. So again, this looks like the spherical wave part. You can do the same thing for n1, and you get minus cos x over x squared minus sine x over x. And you see here the singularity at x equals 0 does not go away. And again, this term here looks like ingoing and outgoing spherical waves at infinity. Well, you can keep going with these practical calculations if you want, but it's a bit tedious and not worth the effort. So those are a lightning introduction to spherical Bessel functions, to the extent that we need to know very much about them. Now, any arbitrary wave function, therefore, away from r equals 0. Can be written as psi is equal to the sum of PL of cos theta alpha L JL of KR plus beta L NL of KR, because these functions form a complete set of axisymmetric functions. Sum is over L. Form a complete set. At least for axisymmetric wave function.
So is there orthogonal?
Yes, there is an orthogonality relationship for the N's and J's, which I have not told you about because we don't actually need to use it for anything. So this should give us a clue as to how to approach problems of this form. Out near infinity, you know that the wave function has got to look like this. And that is sort of somehow adjusted to the form of the spherical Bessel functions, because you know they all look like this out near infinity somehow. This, however, does not. So the first step in dealing with scattering this way is to expand this thing in terms of J's, N's, and P's. So expand the incoming wave in. Well, these things are usually called partial waves. So that partial wave simply means summing over L. Of course, you don't want to write Z as Z. You want to write it as R cos theta in terms of the usual polar angles. Yeah.
Where is the L parameter on
the incoming wave? There isn't one. Well, there is. But that's what we're about to discover.
Oh, sorry.
So we want to write this wave function, e to the ikz, best expressed as e to the ir cos theta, in a basis that looks like this, as a combination of Legendre functions and Bessel functions. Yes.
Great. Just so I can understand where we're going with this. So is this procedure of the partial waves, is it designed to get a better answer than the one we can give you, isn't it?
It's designed to get... The way I've done it so far, it is exact and does not involve any approximations.
Okay.
And it will apply to absolutely anything, whereas in the previous case, it required a little bit of hope that things were going to work out properly.
What were the hopes again?
The hopes were that V was nicely behaved, the wave functions weren't too big at the origin, and two more.
Okay.
The perturbation theory worked properly. We'll do an example that we can't do by a board approximation.
Okay, great.
Shortly, good luck. Or maybe tomorrow, I don't know. So we want to write this in terms of partial waves. You can prove, I will not, that this is a sum from L equals 0 to infinity of something times JL of KR, PL of cos theta, and then some numbers corresponding to these alphas, I to the power L to L plus 1. And that's it. That is the partial wave form of e to the ikz. That it is the sum of jl's is not surprising. E to the ikz, if you think about it, is a solution of the Schrödinger equation with zero potential. So when I write down what this wave function is, there's no potential, it just obeys the free Schrödinger equation everywhere. And we know e to the ikz is physically acceptable because it's obviously a solution of the Schrödinger equation and does not blow up anywhere. It is therefore not surprising that we find that it can be written in terms of things which do not blow up anywhere. JL is well behaved at the origin. So that's not surprising. It's exactly what you'd expect. It's kind of laboring the obvious, but it is nevertheless true. This formula is exact. I've made no approximations when deriving it. It would be very useful to see how this behaves if I expand it in terms of plane waves. In terms of spherical waves. So what I want to do now is to look at this wave function out near infinity. Again, I'm not going to do anything to it. I'm just going to simply write down what this wave function is as r goes to infinity. Recall that JL of KR looked like sine of KR minus L pi over 2 divided by kr. So if I substitute this in, e to the ikz as r goes to infinity looks like the sum from l is 0 to infinity, I to the power l, 2l plus 1, pl of cos theta. And now we get this expression here, sine kr minus l pi over 2. I want to write in terms of exponentials. So this is e to the I kr minus l pi over 2 minus e to the minus I kr minus l pi over 2. You'll notice that sitting here are some nice factors which make this look a little bit better. This phase factor, e to the minus I L pi over 2, is probably best written as minus I to the power L. That's because e to the minus I pi over 2 is minus I. Similarly here, you want an e to the plus I L pi over 2, so that's plus I to the L. And so we can make this thing look a little bit nicer. It's the sum from L is 0 to infinity. 2L plus 1 PL of cos theta 2IKR into. This one is going to give me a minus I to the power L. That combines with this plus I to the power L to give me a 1. So it is an E to the I K R. Then here I have a minus. E to the minus I K R from here, and E to the plus I L pi over 2, so I get an I to the L. I to the L times I to the L is minus to the L. And so I get that expression. So out near infinity, you can now see precisely what has happened. We have written this as some angular dependent piece for each partial wave, and an outgoing spherical wave. And an ingoing spherical wave.
This is for the incoming plane waves?
This is for the waves of the form e to the ikz. So in this formula, there is absolutely no scattering whatsoever. It's the incoming plane waves from the left. They consist of ingoing and outgoing spherical waves. And if you like, although there's no scattering, you can divide these things up into outgoing and ingoing. Now, let's suppose that you turn on some interaction potential, V. But V of R goes to zero at infinity. Fast enough. There is a question of what fast enough means. But we will just simply say, suppose V of R is zero at infinity. What is now the wave function? Well, it must still obey del squared plus k squared psi equals zero. Furthermore, in a scattering situation, the incoming spherical waves must be the same, because the only thing that scattering does is to change the outgoing form of the wave. Scattering only changes the outgoing form. So the wave function must still look something like this. You can't change this bit. This bit is fixed because this represents the incoming wave. The only thing you can ever do is to change the outgoing waves, which are these bits. Furthermore, the only thing that you can do for this thing here is to change its phase. You can't change its scale for the very simple reason that you want to conserve probability. If you changed the scale of this thing, you would be changing the probability current out at infinity, and that you can't do, because you know that everything that goes in must come out. So conservation of probability means that the outgoing wave can change at most by a phase. So the scattered wave, one moment, the total wave at infinity now looks like psi equals sum from L equals naught to infinity 2L plus 1 PL of cos theta over 2IKR. And then you change each of these things by a phase. E to the 2I delta L, e to the IKR, minus to L, e to the minus IKR. Delta L is called the phase shift. For the Lth or L equals something partial wave. Now, the two questions, yours first, because you were first.
Assuming that potential V is spherically symmetric here.
Yes, we are. V is a function of R, not of theta and phi. If you want to put in some theta or phi dependence, you are welcome to do so, but it becomes very complicated. Too complicated for us. Now, I guess nuclear physics people do that all the time, but I'm not going to. It's not hard, it's just the same, but more of it. Your question. I've answered it. Okay. So, this is the new wave function out near infinity. You want to interpret this as being still the incoming wave and the scattered wave. So we want to interpret this we want to think of this as being a slightly different version of e to the ikz plus e to the ikr over r f of theta. Which means, can we find what f of theta actually is? To which the answer is, of course, yes. How do we do that? This combination of stuff is all of these combinations of partial waves. E to the IKR over R times F of theta is the same thing, but with a phase shift set equal to zero. So E to the IKR over R, F of theta, is equal to, well, this doesn't change between the two, and you'll get sum from L equals 0 to infinity 2L plus 1 over 2IKR e to the IKR e to the 2I delta L minus 1. Or, if you prefer it, F of theta, which gives you the scattering cross section, is L equals 0 to infinity sum 2L plus 1 over 2I e to the 2i delta l minus 1. So this represents the scattered part of the wave. Notice that if you put delta L equal to 0, you get no scattering. The whole thing will vanish.
Where is the
shadow?
Where is
the? Oh, they got left out. I should have said inadvertently left out. So that's f of theta. For ease of computation, this is often written in the slightly dissimilar form. Which makes some computations fractionally easier. A what?
There's a k in the denominator?
Absolutely.
And why is it minus 1 and not minus to the L?
It's this expression minus itself with delta equal to 0. This is the exact wave function. This is these two objects, and you subtract off e to the ikz, which has got that thing, but with this thing replaced by 1. So the minus to the L terms all cancel. You'll notice that I have done nothing approximate in this. All I've assumed is that v goes to 0 at infinity, sufficiently fast that I can write the wave functions in this form. So if it's strictly finite, or falls off faster than 1 over r, and possibly even 1 over r actually, there is no problem with this expression. So this is does not involve any approximation so far. Yes. Right, in the first?
For the first, you wrote 2 e to the 2 I delta L.
Here, yes.
Is the first angle 2 delta L or delta L?
The phase shift is delta L. That's why I wanted to write it in this form. You see, if you look in this form, there's a phase, and then a sort of thing that is more obviously real. So it's this thing which controls the size of something. It's just a sort of extra phase factor type thing. It may become a little more obvious when we do a different calculation. Let's look at the scattering cross section. Scattering cross-section, d sigma d omega, was equal to the square modulus of f. So if you substituted this formula here, then what you will get is 1 over k squared, sum over L and L prime, which is a mess, more to infinity, 2L plus 1, 2L prime plus 1, e to the I, delta L minus delta L prime, sine delta L sine delta L prime, PL of cos theta, PL prime of cos theta. Well, there's absolutely nothing you can do about that to make it look nice. But you could evaluate instead the total scattering cross section. This is a differential scattering cross section. This you get by integrating d sigma d omega over all solid angles. That is to say, it's d sigma d omega integral sine theta d phi. Phi goes from 0 to 2 pi, and theta goes from 0 to pi. If you do that, this will give me a factor of 2 pi over k, 2 pi over k squared. Sum. 2 pi I just get by doing this over 5, nothing depends on pi. 2L plus 1, 2L prime plus 1, e to the I delta L minus delta L prime, sine delta L prime, integral sine theta, PL of cos theta, PL prime of cos theta, d theta from 0 to pi. This integral I can do because I know that the Legendre polynomials are orthogonal. We did have that formula written up somewhere. So sigma is equal to 2 pi over k squared, sum L prime, 2L plus 1, 2L prime plus 1, e to the I delta L minus delta L prime, sine delta L prime. And then this integral is going to give us delta L prime under 2 over 2 L plus 1. So I can now do one of the sums. So this comes from orthogonality. This thing collapses down to just one sum now. This thing goes away. One of these cancels that. And you're left with sine squared delta L. That is a nice looking formula. We've missed out a 2L plus 1, haven't we? For the total scattering cross section. You can regard this as being the sum of cross sections for each partial wave. So that sigma L is equal to 4 pi over k squared, 2L plus 1, sine squared delta L. If you stare at this, there are two remarkable consequences. They are three remarkable consequences. First of all, this thing has got a 1 over k squared dependence. So that tells you what you already knew, namely that in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, scattering falls off with energy in some particular way. You might say, well, delta L has got some kind of dependence on energy, because it's a function of energy. True, it's a function of energy, but for each partial wave, sine delta L cannot do anything other than lie between 0 and 1. So whatever it is, it still must be that sigma L looks like that or falls off faster. So this is times some number. Which is less than 1. What call this number? What if we call it sine squared delta L? So it implies that sigma each partial wave sigma L must fall off like 1 over energy for or faster. But it cannot increase with energy. It's absolutely impossible. This is sometimes known as the unitarity bound. To bring that, put that into complete perspective, just think about what unitarity says. Unitarity says is another way of saying that probability is conserved. What goes in must come out. So, the fact that delta L was real was an expression of that fact, so that you only got a phase factor in front of the outgoing waves. So the unitarity bound is unitarity requires delta L to be real. And the consequence of that is, of course, that sine squared delta L must be less than or equal to 1. So not only does the cross-section for each partial wave not exceed this, 1 over k squared, it cannot never be bigger than this. So sigma L must always be less than or equal to 4 pi over k squared into 2L plus 1, and that is called the unitarity bound. If you violate the unitarity bound when you calculate a cross-section, it usually means, well, assuming you haven't made a mistake, it usually means that there is something dramatically sick with your theory, and there are plenty of examples of that, which I hope David Tong will tell you about. Notice that I had absolutely no approximation in this so far. This is an exact result, does not depend on perturbation theory or anything else that's fundamentally imprecise. There is another result, which if you think about it is quite remarkable, having to do with this kind of cross-section. We've calculated here the total cross-section as a function of energy in the form of k and in terms of the phase shifts. So we've got this expression here. Let's compare that to something that we have sitting over here. This thing looks suspiciously like that thing. Let's calculate f of 0. F of 0 is the forward scattering amplitude. In other words, the amplitude for scattering if you just go straight on. Yeah. So it's what we call f of 0. This thing is equal to now I get puzzled by something. No, I'm not puzzled. It's equal to 1 over k sum from L equals 0 to infinity 2L plus 1 e to the I delta L sine delta L times PL of 1. But we've already discovered that PL of 1 is 1. Now, if we stare at that expression here, it bears an astonishing relationship to this one. The only difference is that you need to calculate the imaginary part of f of 0. The imaginary part of this takes the e to the I delta L and turns it into a sine. So this is 1 over k, sum from L equals 0 to infinity, 2L plus 1 sine squared delta L. So we have discovered that the total scattering cross-section, that expression over there, is equal to 4 pi over k times the imaginary part of the forward scattering amplitude. At first sight, you might not have expected that, because this thing is quadratic in f, and this thing is linear in f. But again, this is a consequence of unitarity, although it's a more subtle consequence of unitarity. This result is sometimes called the optical theorem. And again, must hold universally and independent of any kind of approximation. It's not something that requires an approximation for you to be able to find. If you think about this, this has some subtle consequences. Because you might have thought that any old f of theta would be fine. You would think, naively, that if I just tell you what f of theta is, I could just construct any f of theta, and that should do as the scattering amplitude. Not true. Only certain classes of functions could ever possibly obey something like mod f squared is related to the imaginary part of f of 0. That is to say, mod f squared, where you sum over all partial waves, looks something like the imaginary part of f of 0, summed over all partial waves, crudely speaking. It's obviously completely impossible. Well, that is a tantalizing hint of something deeper about all theories that involve any kind of scattering. As a historical point, it was contemplating this relationship in its relativistic setting which led to the invention of string theory. I will leave that to whoever teaches the string theory course to explain to you. But it really comes about because we have made no approximations whatsoever, apart from the fact that we did something non-relativistic, when deriving these formulae. Right. It's probably a good place to stop for today. We will use this formalism for something tomorrow. So let's stop there.